This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Live and Learn with me, Dashran Johan. A few weeks ago, Russia invaded Ukraine. But today's episode is not going to be about that specifically, but rather about China and Southeast Asia. Now, some political scientists have suggested that China may be observing the events of Russia-Ukraine closely and perhaps even use it as a blueprint to invade and take over Taiwan, which could lead to ripple effects experienced across Asia, including Southeast Asia. Associate Professor Dr. Guido Benny, who's a program director of the Bachelor of Social Science in International Relations at Taylor's University, believes that there are important lessons to be drawn for Southeast Asians by observing the Russia-Ukraine crisis and the whole situation with China. Dr. Guido joins me on the show today to discuss all of this and more. Welcome to the show, Dr. Guido.
Yeah, thank you so much, Dasvan.
Broadly speaking, why should people on this side of the world, I'm talking about people in our region, Southeast Asia, pay attention to the Russia-Ukraine crisis? Are there any implications towards people in this region?
Yeah, we seems in the Southeast Asia, we seems very far away from Russia, from Ukraine. Yeah, it's another part of the world, right? But actually, Russia-Ukraine crisis, which has been going on for almost a month, yeah, actually has deeper implications for Southeast Asian people and leaders. On one side, the war impacts our livelihood now. Of course, you know, the price of oil is now very expensive. Yeah, if you see, maybe the price of RON 95 is not so expensive, it's still stable, but RON 97, it's now 4 ringgit per liter, right? Almost everything, the price now become more expensive. So we can imagine maybe people with in the margin life, yeah, they now cannot afford to buy a lot of things because of this. So this is only just one of the example of the impact. And then I would argue that the development of the war should become a valuable lesson to avoid similar security crisis to happen in Asia. From what we witnessed in Ukraine, people suffer the most if similar conflict occur in Asia.
Let's talk about China for a bit, right? What is China's stand on the Russian-Ukraine crisis? And I'm wondering, Dr. Guido, if it informs us about how they view invasions and aggressions.
They say that this invasion is out of effort and no one benefit. So meaning that China even is not benefiting from this conflict, yeah, because actually China has relations with Russia, of course, and then Ukraine. And actually they also got the problem because of this conflict. Because you know they need oil for their industry. They rely on maybe wheat, because wheat and oil, and Ukraine is one of the largest producers for oil and wheat, oil, wheat, and then also the sunflower oil, yeah. But politically, they do not condemn Russia, but they are also not really show a great support for Russia. Yeah, we can see that they are also calculating because there are implications of this war for them if they support Russia. Of course, they have to see the response from the West. Yeah, because actually their relations with the United States is much more valuable than the relations with Russia in terms of economy.
Right. So with that in mind, Dr. Guido, in a recent opinion piece, right, you mentioned that there are parallels that can be observed between Russia-Ukraine crisis and the whole China-Taiwan-Southeast Asia situation. What are these parallels?
Yes, the essence of my latest opinion piece is the parallel of Russia-Ukraine crisis in China-Taiwan and Southeast Asia. I also stated my worry that the crisis development in Ukraine may embolden great powers in their conflict in East and Southeast Asia, especially if Putin's invasion, Russian invasion, is appeased, meaning that if Russia can go freely with, to invade Ukraine without any consequence to them. Yeah. Some experts see the parallel between Russia-Ukraine crisis with China-Taiwan relations. We can see a lot of writings on that. Yeah. But I see actually this view is oversimplistic. Russia and Ukraine are two different sovereign countries because which are members of the United Nations. On the other hand, Taiwan is not a recognized member of the United Nations. However, it is a stable country with great success in economy and functioning democracy. Yeah. It is arguable that Russia and Ukraine are related, but actually they are different entities. On the other hand, China and Taiwan are sharing ancestors, but they are separated because of ideological differences. At some point of history, they are longing for unification actually. But what I say is the crisis in Ukraine has also provided lessons for Southeast Asia, China relations, as we also have some issues with China over, for example, South China Sea.
So what are these lessons? You say it offers lessons, right? What are these lessons that we can draw from the situation?
We know about South China Sea here, South China Sea. China has claimed South China Sea for a long time. On the other hand, this sea is also claimed by five ASEAN countries: Brunei, Indonesia, Malaysia, the Philippines, Vietnam. They are claiming the South China Sea. The claim of this five ASEAN countries are based on international law, actually, which is the United Nations Convention on the Law of the Sea, UNCLOS. The law defines an exclusive economic zone as generally extending 200 nautical miles from the shore. So based on the law, coastal countries like Brunei, Indonesia, Malaysia, the Philippines, and Vietnam, they have valid claim over 200 nautical miles from their coast.
Yeah? Right.
And then because of this, these five countries have the right to explore and exploit, and also responsible to conserve and manage both living and non-living resources in South China Sea.
Right.
Okay, China has gradually and systematically increased its action to assert its control in South China Sea, actually. Since 8 years ago, China has built significant numbers of artificial islands to function as military bases. We know that, yeah? Mm-hmm. It has been detected by satellites since 8 years ago. One example is the Mischief Reef, a mere 250 kilometers from the Philippines and about 400 kilometers from Sabah. From these military bases, China has placed their missiles, their weapons, their aircraft, battleships over the South China Sea. Let's examine the last 1 year.
Okay.
Yeah, just last 1 year, China has done a lot of things actually. China has announced the passage of China's Coast Guard laws, which take effect since February 2021. China has systematically used gray zone tactics to scare away non-Chinese fishers, and even they also harass resource exploration projects from other territorial claimants in the South China Sea. For example, in June 2021, a new standoff occurred between Indonesia and China when China Coast Guard attempted to block the commercial drilling operation within Natuna Sea.
Right.
Natuna Sea is actually belong to Indonesia based on the UNCLOS. Yeah? And then July and October 2021, we read news about Chinese Coast Guard ships have been putting pressure and harassing the new Malaysian oil and gas project in South China Sea of Sarawak. And then in November 2021, Chinese Coast Guard used water cannon to attack the Philippines boats This Philippine boat actually heading to a disputed shore occupied by the Filipino Marines. So they are sending logistic to these Filipino Marines in the South China Sea, yeah, and China using water cannon to disturb them,
right,
protect them. Yeah. So China has done a really concrete thing to assert its control over the South China Sea.
Right. And on that same note, right, US, Japan, Australia and Britain have also increased their naval presence in the Indo-Pacific region. How does this affect China and countries in the region?
The active involvement of foreign powers such as US, Japan, Australia and Britain in the region, yeah, is actually sometimes they are invited by certain countries because they thought that they need support from foreign powers to face China, actually.
Right.
But yeah, actually, this may embolden China in their claim of a South China Sea further. May further embolden China. Yeah. China's assertiveness in South China Sea actually heightened during Trump and Biden administration now. You know, in 2012, that's during Obama, yeah,
right,
United States Senate passed resolution 524 stating that the U.S. reaffirmed its commitment to assist Southeast Asian nations to remain strong and independent in South China Sea, meaning that they want to support Southeast Asian countries to be strong in the claim of South China Sea. And even they say that they support enhanced operation by the U.S. armed forces in the Western Pacific. After that, 1 year after that, U.S. conducted the regular Freedom of Navigation operation, FONOP, in the South China Sea since 2013, and argue that their support, their operation is to maintain the freedom of navigation as one of the principles of customary international law under the UN Convention Law of the Sea. Yeah. And then this issue even peaked during Trump administration because, you know, Trump increased the frequency of freedom of navigation operation in South China Sea. Yeah. And then even Trump later put a sanction to China threat war, right? Yeah. And then last year, U.S. Navy conducted freedom of navigation drills, yeah, in the South China Sea to counter Chinese claim in the region. This is seen as provocation to China, which claim most of the South China Sea, and it further emboldened their claim of a South China Sea because actually China, as the claimant, think that they have strong claim over the South China Sea.
Right.
Yeah. I can figure out at least three reasons that we need to understand from their viewpoint. Mm. Yeah. Firstly, China feels the need to increase its control and security over South China Sea, which they perceive as their sea territory, because they perceive that it's their sea territory, they need to control it. Yeah. And then because South China Sea is considered very important for them, for the security, trade and commerce for China,
right,
the export and import to and from China rely on the sea. If the sea is blocked, China's economic security is threatened. Secondly, it is because China needs the resources. So China Sea actually very rich in oil and gas. The U.S. Energy Information Agency estimate that the sea holds about 190 trillion cubic feet of natural gas and 11 billion barrels of oil in proof and probable reserves. So, you know, of course, they need oil and gas, especially they want to replace their coal. Yeah, their coal. Okay. And then, South China Sea also rich for fisheries. And then, although South China Sea covers only 2.5% of the Earth's surface, but it has produced some 12% of global fish catch.
Right.
So this is very rich in terms of oil, gas, and fisheries.
That's right.
Yeah, so it's the second reason is because of the resources. The third reason, because China's rise in regional political and economic power and Belt and Road Initiative project, yeah, provides China with the confidence over their strength and advantageous position over their neighbors. Right. Given economic benefit with China, no neighboring country will bet its future to go against China starkly. Maybe we are not happy with this, but we have to be keep friendly with China. China is fully aware of this, I think.
On the show with me today is Associate Professor Dr. Guido Benny, Program Director of the Bachelor of Social Science in International Relations at Taylor's University. After the break, I ask him about the sort of relationship ASEAN should have with the likes of China. We'll be back with more on Live and Learn BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Live and Learn. I'm Dashran Johan, and on the show with me today is Associate Professor Dr. Guido Benny, Program Director of the Bachelor of Social Science in International Relations. And we're talking about the important lessons to be drawn for Southeast Asians by observing the Russia-Ukraine crisis. So, Dr. Guido, I recently spoke to a lecturer in global political economy. He's also a political psychologist at the Chinese University of Hong Kong, Peter Beattie. And when I asked him if China could be observing the Russian-Ukraine crisis and use it as a blueprint for potential aggressions on their end, whether it's against Taiwan, whether it's just against other countries in Southeast Asia, what Peter Beattie said was that this very well could be crackpot realism, especially when it comes from Western media. This idea that you're just assuming the worst out of another country, and in countries like the US, they use this idea of crackpot realism to sort of stoke the flames of war and whatnot, right? What are your thoughts on this?
It is the viewpoints in international relations, in diplomacy. It is about how the leaders, yeah, especially in US, think about the world, see the world from their viewpoints. Let's understand what is the meaning of realism in international relations. Realism is the viewpoints that international relations that see the world in antagonistic worldview. So they see the world in we versus them mentality. Yeah. So US versus non-Western. China is non-Western.
Right.
You cannot control China completely. So it's like their competitor or their enemy, future enemy. Yeah. Which is actually not a good thing to think about the world, right? Mm-hmm. Realism believes that countries are inherently selfish and inhabit a perilous place threatened by other countries for perpetual war. So they see that their country is in the world of danger. They are always threatened by war. So they have to be prepared for war. Yeah. So if you want peace, you need to build power in terms of military power, conventional and nuclear weapons. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They need to have strong diplomacy, strong economy, cultural strength, etc. This realist viewpoints is the most dominant viewpoints believed by many world leaders. Many world leaders are diplomats believe these viewpoints, including President Trump.
Right.
Yeah, we can see how he see the world. And after he controlled the administration of US, he directly goes against, they change the perspective of China completely as the enemy. So we can see this is the realism, the crackpot realism viewpoints, which is actually true. Yeah.
Right.
Putin is also like that, mm-hmm. right? But on the other hand, actually, there are alternative viewpoints in international relations. There are world leaders who believe that liberalism worldview, that believe that the world fell into conflict and war because of inadequate and corrupt system. Like people, states are basically goods. Ethical can differentiate between good and bad. In order to achieve peace, we need to build world system based on fairness, human rights, governed in international law and international organization. after World War II, world leaders started to develop these institutions, United Nations, IMF, World Bank, World Health Organization. This is to maintain peace and to avoid war, actually. In addition, to avoid war, the world should allow free trade so they can be interconnected and interdependent. You know, interdependent countries will try their best to avoid war because war is not good for their business, not good for the economy. Yeah. Unfortunately, many leaders are still believers of realism. Putin, for example, many say that he's still living in the Cold War mentality. Trump, also at the same camp, that see China as the rival.
I guess when we boil it down, right, Dr. Guido, is China a threat to smaller countries in this region, in Southeast Asia, the way Russia is a threat to countries in its region? We talk about Ukraine, for example, and the same way US is an active threat to basically many, many, many countries around across the world, similar, like we see in the Middle East, whether it's Yemen, Iran, Afghanistan, so on and so forth. Is China a threat to us the way US and Russia is a threat to other countries?
In international relations, we call it hegemon. Or in layman terms, it's called superpower. This is the manifestation of great power behavior, superpower behavior. You know, the great power, they don't like competition. As great power, US, Russia, China have their own interests. And also, they also the capacity to realize their interests because of their supremacy of military powers against their smaller neighbors. So, like other superpower, since China's independence in 1949, China was involved in many conflict and war. They were involved in aggression in Tibet in 1950, Korean War in 1950s, Taiwan Strait Crisis in 1954, 1958, 1996. And then they have war with India in 1962, 1967. And then also the last, the latest war, battles over borders with India in 2017 and also last year, 2021. They were involved also in Vietnam War. They also fight with Soviet Union. And they are also conflicting with Southeast Asian countries in South China Sea. And also they have war with Vietnam in 1979.
That's right.
Yeah, China has some strategic reason for launching the war. If we want to understand that. Of course, we are really sorry for the impact of such war on human life and livelihood. Having said that, actually, whether China is a threat to small country in the region, China actually has done a lot of action that benefit neighboring countries, actually. Their trade relations with China is advantageous. It's giving a lot of benefit for us. Investment, Chinese investment, has contributed a lot to national development of neighboring countries. So they are two sides of the coins. They can be threats, but we also can see them as give us benefit because we are neighbors.
Okay, let's talk about that a little bit more, because you talk about the benefits, right? That China is also on the same note, provided countries in this region, whether it's ASEAN countries and whatnot. How do many countries in this region, especially ASEAN countries, rely on China?
Yeah, this is interesting to discuss. And I think we all know that many ASEAN countries currently rely on China to cross-border trade and foreign direct investment. Let me show you the statistics. Southeast Asian countries have very close trade relations with almost one-fifth of ASEAN trade in goods in 2021 last year being with China. So one-fifth of our international trade is with China. This figure actually far exceeding ASEAN trade with US, which is 11%. So we can say that the value of trade with China is twice of US.
Right.
Yeah. And then all with you, which is only 5% of the international trade in ASEAN. So we are trading with, our trading with China is 4 times with US. Right. With China, then with EU. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. In terms of investment, China and Hong Kong combined was the second largest investor in ASEAN after the United States. China is one of the top investors in several ASEAN member countries such as Indonesia, Thailand, the Philippines, Malaysia, Myanmar, Cambodia, and Laos. For infrastructure project, so for infrastructure project is investment that I think it's very difficult to find investors. Yeah, China BRI provide the avenue for development, for funding infrastructure development in these countries. So there are the major sources for funding infrastructure development in ASEAN countries. And then the economic cooperation between China and ASEAN will only accelerate further, given the mega free trade deal, the RCEP, the Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership. It was inked 2 years ago and has been in effect since the beginning of this year,
right?
1st January 2022. According to Nikkei, China has taken advantage of the plunge in FDI from other countries in Southeast Asia during the pandemic to outspend US in the region. In 2020, for example, when global investment in Southeast Asia decreased by 31%, so you can imagine because of the pandemic,
right?
Investment to Southeast Asia decreased by 31%. Mm-hmm. But China's investment in Southeast Asia increased by 50%. You can see, actually, China provided a lot of opportunities that other country have left us, but China came to save us, actually.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. This has resulted in very tricky relations with China. Yeah, when it comes to China asserting her claim over the waters surrounding ASEAN.
How likely is China's invasion, you know, the way Russia is behaving with Ukraine right now, how likely is it that we see a similar situation in this region, in the Asian region, in which China perhaps does what Russia is doing to Ukraine, but China is doing it to Taiwan? How likely is that to happen? And if it does happen, what are the implications towards other countries in this region?
A hard question that difficult to answer, actually. Because of the implication will be very bad, very catastrophic. Yeah? Because we can see after Russian aggression in Ukraine, the world was disturbed with oil price crisis that affect our industry. Yeah? And then also living costs as price of goods increase so much. Okay? So if it were to happen between China and Taiwan, the impact to Southeast Asia will be catastrophic. Yeah? Because it is very near to our region. It's only our neighbor, right? So, and there will be humanitarian crisis like what happened in Ukraine now. There will be refugees. And we also can expect that the war may be protracted, will happen for a long time, like what happened in Ukraine right now.
Right.
You know, Taiwan is, they have sea borders. Well, Ukraine, they have a land border, so it's easy to move troops. Soviet, the Russia is easy to move troops to Ukraine.
Right.
But moving troops to Taiwan is very difficult because it's sea borders, so they are protected by the geography, actually. Yeah. Yeah, of course, it is expected that US allies will put sanctions to China if it happens. So I don't think this is very little chance that this can happen. Because actually China has closely monitored the war in Ukraine and its impact to Russia. And Russia is expected to decrease in power and economic strength because of this current Ukraine war.
Right.
Yeah. So I don't think China will consider this. Right. Because We also say that Chinese leaders, President Xi Jinping, is rational people. Mm-hmm. He's a rational man. Yeah, we can see how U.S. and her allies have provoked him, but he is still able to control his emotion while keep building Chinese strength.
How do we boil it down then? Because we talk about learning, observing the invasion that is going on between Russia invading Ukraine, learning from it, drawing parallels from it. At the same time, we also talk about how China has benefited neighboring countries in this region. You talk about how China has a rational leader at the helm. So should we be worried? How do we process all this information, right? As Southeast Asians observing and trying to learn from the Russian-Ukraine crisis, what would be or what should be ASEAN's best interest when looking at the superpower in this region, which is China?
ASEAN's best interest is to maintain peace, stability and security in the region, both in Southeast Asia and also East Asia. Because actually the security of East Asia relies on security of Southeast Asia, you know? Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know that there is no forum that can unite the leaders in East Asia without ASEAN.
Right.
East ASEAN Summit, East Asian Summit, APEC, Asia-Pacific Economic Caucus, it's only happened because ASEAN invite them. So actually, this is the extension of ASEAN regionalism, ASEAN diplomacy, ASEAN international relations. So ASEAN here is playing an important role. Yeah? So the ASEAN best interest is to maintain peace, stability, and security in the region. And ASEAN needs to always remain neutral, non-interventionist, friendly, and maintain the region as the zone of peace, freedom, and neutrality. And this is the jargon in ASEAN, ZOPFAN, zone of peace, freedom, and neutrality, which is actually excellent, excellent, because it has keep us in peace, right? And then how about Western support? I think Western support must be faced with extra caution because we can hardly rely on Western powers for support. Should China escalate its already aggressive stance in this maritime issue? Learning from the current war in Ukraine when NATO provided very minimal support, despite given promise of membership to Ukraine before. And then it made evident that we cannot rely on external power in solving the conflict in the region. Yeah. So the only way for ASEAN is to be united and block.
Right.
Yeah, but here is the problem, because even if there is one member objects to a proposal, it's a no-go for a decision. For example, in 2017, China exploited the situation during the 30th ASEAN summit in Manila. ASEAN members cannot come to an agreement to denounce China's militarization efforts and disputes in the South China Sea because one country disagreed to bring this issue to the forum. We also can expect a similar response from ASEAN if China engaged in military conflict. Yeah, if they were engaging in military conflict with us. So we should avoid this to happen. Having said that, as a citizen of ASEAN, I would argue that it is the region's interest to maintain good relations with China, as well as other countries, US, Japan, Korea, Europe, Australia, and so on. Yeah. Because the maintenance of good relations is important to enjoy the benefit of business, trade, investment, and opportunities, with each of countries leveraging on China to address our own development and political needs. Therefore, instead of go against China, we need to maintain constructive engagement with China and other powers in the issue of South China Sea.
Right. And before we wrap this conversation up, would you have some final thoughts or a final message for us?
With rising power in economy, international politics, and military, China has the capacity and also the rights, yeah, to peaceful rise to superpower, their ambition. It's only logical that they have this ambition because they have the capacity. We will gain more. In fact, if we are friendly with China and with China's peaceful rise, we will gain more because they need resources. They need to have international support. They need to have international trade. They need to invest abroad. Yeah, so Southeast Asia is the nearest region for them to invest. Right?
Right.
So we will gain more if we are friendly with China than fighting them. Right. Finally, ASEAN is well known for our soft approach against disputes or conflict. Many experts say that, in fact, this soft approach made ASEAN relevant and quite successful in uniting the region, make the region as a region of peace and stability. ASEAN, in fact, has played an important role in integrating the economy, not only in Southeast Asia, but also East Asia, East Asian Summit, the RCEP, the Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership, it's from ASEAN actually. Yeah. And to some extent, Asia-Pacific under APEC.
Right.
We should not also forget that ASEAN has been successful in facilitating dialogues among leaders in both East Asia and Southeast Asia during the annual ASEAN Plus 3 Summit.
Mm.
Also ministerial meetings among the 13 countries, between the 10 ASEAN countries, China, Japan, and Korea. Right? So this is the only forum that they discuss. They have dialogue, right? And you know, when they have dialogue, they will not fight. Yeah, when they have dialogue, they will be able to settle issue. Yeah, and also don't forget the ASEAN regional forum is only made possible because of ASEAN. However, the last piece is ASEAN need to be unified. Yeah, we have to come with one voice and make ASEAN centrality in decision-making as a reality in order to gain better bargaining position with great powers.
Thank you so much for joining me today, Dr. Guido.
Thank you for having me.
That was Associate Professor Dr. Guido Benny. He's a Program Director of the Bachelor of Social Science in International Relations at Taylor's University. If you missed any part of this conversation, you can check out the podcast on the BFM app, bfm.my, or pretty much wherever you get your podcasts from. I'm Darshan Johan, and this has been Live and Learn, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.